And welcome to In-Game Chat for Saturday, July 6th, 2013. This is Season 7, Episode 22. I'm Scott.
I'm James.
I'm Matt.
I'm Jeremy.
And I'm RJ.
And welcome, everybody, to the show. If you'd like to get in touch with us, our phone number is 334-272-9228. You can find us on Twitter at In-Game Chat, as well as Facebook. You can email us, everyone, at ingamechat.net. We are streaming the cam feed right now through Ustream. You can find us there or hit up our Facebook page and watch from there, as well as join the chat room live while we broadcast. Another week in gaming has gone by, and we had The Walking Dead 400 Days release. We're going to be talking about that a little later on in the show. Spoilers with that, but we will give you a heads up before we get there when we talk about it. And one of the other things that took place this week, which was surprising, sort of. I mean, Don Matrick left Microsoft. That may not have been a surprise to you. It may have been something that you thought, well, it's probably bound to happen. Some people blame it on the whiplash they got from the Xbox One announcements and everything else, just how bad the whole PR situation was going for Microsoft. It could have been a surprise, however, to know that it was Zynga was his choice to go to. So interesting to see how that worked out. But yes, he has left Microsoft, and apparently right before a massive reorganization of the company. And I think currently, what, Ballmer is the head of...
He's not exactly the head.
He's who you report to.
I did think that was a little bit strange. It is, and maybe I'm completely wrong, but it seems to me unusual that the head of a company would be the interim director of any particular department or branch or division of a company. They usually have way too much to do. A lot of times you'll just find the most senior junior executive within that department and have that person act as an interim until you can bring the new person in. So I thought it was a little weird that Ballmer himself would step in. And I think a lot of people got worried hearing that name.
Yeah, really.
As gamers, we don't really talk about him an awful lot. If you want to discuss Microsoft and their overall strategy and where they've been for the last many, many years in terms of the directions they're growing their business, and you can say an awful lot about Ballmer. You can say a lot of funny things about him, and you can be really worried about him. But from the point of view of gaming, Don Matrick has been Microsoft for a very long time. So I think people were mostly just looking at something and maybe being more upset about it than they should. But I don't think him having anything to do with it in particular matters at all. He's got plenty to do. He's not looking to call the shots.
No.
At the Xbox division. And to him, the Xbox division isn't necessarily any more important than anything else, except for the fact that he might be looking to draw some of those different divisions together in a new form.
Yeah, this did come at the same time as a massive reorganization in the company. Like, I can't remember the name of the department when Matrick was in charge of it, but it's all getting shuffled around. It's going to be a different department.
Their entertainment division or something
right,
like that?
Right, right. And now it's going to be part of an overall hardware division. And we've heard conflicting reports about whether Matrick was lined up to head that new department, or whether he was being passed over for it, and whether that had anything to do with him leaving. I don't really know what's going on there, but
I hate timing like this.
Yeah,
it makes it almost impossible to figure out what was the reason behind any one thing happening, and it makes the speculation sort of endless, but it doesn't. There's no prize at the end for possibly being right when everything comes out later, and it's almost impossible to identify what that one thing might be. There's no way it could be one thing. Was the shuffle impending, and he wasn't going to get what he wanted, and he decided to reach out of the company for a brass ring? Was he being actively courted by someone else? We'd heard rumors that he was being courted by EA, so maybe he was being courted by several different people. And setting aside the last 2 months, I thought it was generally believed that Don Matrick did a very good job helming the Xbox division, from outside of the company, maybe not from gamers. I'm sure everybody would like Jay Allard back or something, but so he hasn't really been embattled now, but for a little over 6 weeks. So I didn't really get the impression that he was looking to jump ship. And if these talks were really going on back as early as April, maybe they were casual, maybe they really intensified. Maybe he thought, I'm kind of happy at Microsoft, but thank you so much for the offer. And then on May 22nd was like, hey, by the way, remember that thing you offered me? Maybe we could go back to talking about that. It's likely to be all of those things together, perhaps. I don't know. I'm just frustrated by the fact that there's so much happening that we'll never be able to figure out exactly what it was. Right. All we know is that he's gone, like, lickety-split, and really, really fast.
And it's interesting, again, you throw around, it's speculation, but had Microsoft not had the results that they've had from their Xbox One reveal...
If it had been the other way around, if it had been a really, a minimally angry approach, mm-hmm. or response, rather, to the DRM scenario, and if people really had looked at it and agreed to some extent that they were offering good value, and if people really had bought into the idea of the television, I don't see how they could possibly have created a scenario where everyone was really happy about what they did. I believe their problem was that they always thought they could sell it better. And if they had managed to, if they had won just one or two battles, you know, would all of this have turned out different? Was Matrix already on the way out? Was the reshuffling already what it was going to be?
It's hard to believe that Matrix, that you go into a position like head of Zynga without having it lined up months in advance.
The same way you have DRM lined up months in advance. These are billion-dollar companies, and they are run by $100 million men.
Right.
These guys don't really do anything on short notice.
On the other hand, Ballmer's reaction, which was essentially, you guys just report to me till I can figure out what to do, seems like somebody who was sort of blindsided with it.
Or he hadn't had time or opportunity to figure out where exactly would be the right place to go looking for an interim person.
Right.
That is a fairly good point. Makes me think that he was being courted for a while and really just knuckled under sometime in the last month to 6 weeks, so that the possibility was already there.
Okay.
He didn't start shopping on May 22nd, but he was being shopped and finally agreed that, you know, maybe I don't want to be here as a part of this. If this isn't somewhere that... I mean, a lot of these guys don't look right to us, okay? They don't look like us. They don't look like our kind of people. They look like executives. They claim that they've been in software in one way, shape, or form for a really long time. But the ones among them that really are hardcore geeks, hardcore nerds, hardcore coding, code monkeys and engineers, and all of these guys have grown into becoming an executive. They've sort of grown out of their naturalistic tendencies that they had in their youth and middle age, and they're kind of beyond that, and they look like executives, and you know, so they may be a pack of doofuses, or they might look like it at least, but they really aren't, and they do have thick skin. Nobody can get up there and put up with what these guys have had to put up with in front of these audiences and come back day after day, week after week, and defend these positions against everybody else, defend somebody else's position against the thing they said themselves. You can't be disemboweled and actually be that soft. He really isn't. He may look it, but he's not. So I don't know that he just had a bad month and said, I'm out of here. Like, there's no way that happened.
Well, Lavos in the chat room seems to believe that he had to have been involved in the Always Online DRM plan. And we were talking about this earlier before the show, and we were kind of going over our notes as to thinking that, was he not on board with this, or was he, you know, was this a situation? It just seems like nobody at Microsoft, like we said, nobody at Microsoft seemed to think that this was a bad idea.
There are tendencies in companies that work like this, not just companies, or any organization that works like this, whether it's large or small, for someone somewhere very high up the chain to have an idea. And instead of that vision being explicitly teased apart and talked about in detail and running down every possible avenue and discussing what those effects are going to be on other departments, on your product, on your customers, on everybody involved, someone somewhere had an idea about what they wanted, not the Xbox to be, but what part the Xbox would play in the future of Microsoft. That thing, I can almost guarantee you, came from above Don Matrick's pay grade.
Yeah.
And he has a very high pay grade. But I have seen this happen before. I have seen bosses surrounded by people whose counsel they refuse. or who they're not interested in, and a history of embattled counselors who, when they disagree, are maybe not out, like openly and directly fired, but people who just aren't, they're kind of moved off to the side. You know, they're shepherded away into another part of the world. So the question isn't about who is the guy, who is the demon lord who struck his scepter against the ground, right, and like
and made it so.
And DRM came pouring forth like hellfire. That's not what happened.
Right.
It's much softer than that, and it's, you know, it's more like people just going along with what they think everybody else wants them to do because they want a seat at the table. And they can agree to it, and on paper, it probably doesn't seem quite so evil. So I agree completely that he was involved in the DRM mm-hmm. thing. I'm not sure that I agree. Well, I don't know. I can't speculate as to which side he was on. Personally, he may have had a completely different feeling, and he may have just been caught up in the, you know, in the movement.
Yeah.
Because that's what it is. Again, we're talking about enormous, enormous corporations. They made no decisions lightly. I think the fastest decision they may have ever made as a company
was
the reversal of DRM, which is why it looks so sloppy.
Yeah. Well, Navid says, pretty sure that if this move was planned for a long time, Microsoft would not have had him front and center at E3.
If they knew about it.
If they knew about it. Yeah, I completely agree with you on that. If they knew about it, which is another thing. Ballmer's statement and the fact that he was front and center at E3 puts me in the belief that Microsoft had no idea this was about to happen, that this was coming.
Or that they had good reason to believe that it wasn't. He may have given them assurances, no, that's okay, I've got headhunters after me, people are looking at me, they're trying to draw me away, but I'm, you know, no, it's fine, I'm here for the long haul.
Because
I've seen that as well.
Yeah.
I've actually been that guy before. No, dude, I'm here, I'm all the way, I'm totally in on this, here's my 2-week notice.
Yeah, and then Sony goes $100 less and gets the big pop at E3 for the no DRM and everything else, and he's getting, meanwhile, his clip with Keighley is all over the place.
The mood turned against him.
It did.
I mean, it really is that simple, but it isn't a question of, oh, nobody likes me, I guess I'll go find another job. I'm telling you, a guy in this position can put up with it.
Yeah,
a guy in this position deals with bad things like this all the time. Granted, this is really bad, and it didn't stop. It didn't let up for a month and a half.
I'm just saying it turned into one of those situations where I'm sure he thought, what's the most recent offer I've had? I'll take that one.
I think a bunch of things. I think it was a bit of a perfect storm. I don't like that cliche, but I think that's what it was. If the guy is smart enough to think about where the best possible future could be, I know that's a little strange considering he went to Zynga, but if he's honestly thinking about what are my future options at a place like Microsoft, anybody who can be given,
what did Zynga give him?
What? How big was that hat?
$50 million?
Anybody worth $50 million to change jobs. This isn't some 18-year-old kid with a miracle startup web app, okay? This is a guy who has proven himself in a particular executive position. Another company says, we think you're worth at least this much money to come do that for us. This guy doesn't need that money. My guess is that he needs a seat at a table somewhere. He wants to be involved in a company somewhere, making decisions, steering the ship.
Mm-hmm. Maybe his seat at Microsoft was kind of getting pulled back.
Yeah. Maybe his chair was on three legs instead of four. You know what I mean? I don't know.
Yeah.
And Zynga, of all places, I mean...
Yeah, I know. The whole rumor of him leaving was one of those things. And then later on in the day, you get, oh, he went to Zynga. And then it's, what? It's one of those, again, like I said, you might not have been surprised that he was leaving Microsoft.
It's hard to find a ship that's sinking faster than Zynga right now.
Yes, it is.
So it's a really curious
place to end up. Maybe he likes bailing water.
Yeah.
I don't know. He might actually like that from an executive point of view.
But apparently they're not sinking enough to throw $50 million at a guy to come work for him. Just to sign on. That's on top of whatever they're going to pay him. They're already giving him $50 million for you to just come over and start working for us right now. Sign this paper, we'll give you $50 million. I don't know. Interesting there.
Just for the purposes of it being fun, making the world a more interesting place.
What are you going to do?
I am going to hope that Don Matrick goes to Zynga and turns it around and makes them successful.
Oh, man. I don't know what it would take to do that, honestly. But
I don't either.
Because they just, you know, just so many holes in that ship that he would have to plug and figure out what to do for that situation. I have no clue. And you talk about Microsoft's restructuring as to what they were doing with the entertainment division.
Right.
I would say that the Xbox One was probably, even though that reorganization hasn't come up, but that was probably the first step in them doing that. When you were talking about they were going, kind of putting it more into the hardware.
Right.
Which is exactly what the Xbox One would be. Mm-hmm. The hardware to put Microsoft front and center in the room of not only the gaming, but the entertainment.
Right. Well, one of the rumors, and it's a pretty strong rumor coming out of Microsoft, is that they're going to give the head of that newly formed hardware division position to Julie Larson Green, who was the head of the Windows division. She had overseen the Office UI design in 2007, and she launched she did the product rollout for Windows 7 and 8. But I think that shows that whether or not they consider Windows 7 to be their flagship, or whether they consider Windows to be their flagship product anymore, mm-hmm. it's not what they're focused on. Their focus is on these devices and services, like Ballmer keeps saying that he wants to focus on, which is why you would take somebody from what would be considered your flagship product and move them over into, you know, the Xbox space, essentially.
Yeah.
What they intend to become their flagship.
That's where
division,
that's what they're putting
the
all of their serious
portion.
Energy into.
Yeah. Yeah. They're a very strange company, and I think the Xbox represents everything about the direction they're going. But they are very odd, and you know, this actually could have nothing to do with anything. It really could have been that, I mean, I don't know, nobody's ever thrown anything like this at me before, but if somebody just says, I know you're perfectly happy, but here's $50 million, you know, where do I care that I'm bailing water?
Mm-hmm. And as Naveed points out in the chat room, if it doesn't turn around, he can come around and say, well, it was too far gone to save anyway, and he's still, you know.
He is, and he still has
the $50 million. No one would disbelieve that either. No.
I know. Everybody's surprised that he went there anyway, and if it doesn't happen, nobody's going to put the blame on him. They'll put the blame on the CEO saying, well, you just gave $50 million to a guy to come around. Why didn't you spend that money?
Because they were going under anyway.
Yeah.
Just giving him the benefit of the doubt, trying to separate what I know to be kind of the monstrous momentum of a giant company that's making a decision, like is what's happening with Microsoft. There was nothing he could do to stem the tide. There was really probably not a whole lot that he could do to help direct the transition. But he goes to Zynga. He says, you give me this. Fine, you're bringing me on. You think I'm worth this much money. You let me do what I want to do. We got to go all the way down to the hull. This isn't about plugging leaks. This is about going all the way down below the waterline, figuring out why you guys are in trouble in the first place. That might actually be very good. There is every reason to believe, because I think the only way that company turns around is if it changes the basic nature of its business practices. I think it's worth believing that that's what he went there to do. The man has plenty of money. What he needs, he's a very powerful guy. What he needs is something to run.
Mm-hmm. He just wants to sit, like you said, at the head of the table.
Yeah.
And make it's, those...
Look, James C. Kirk didn't want to be an admiral, because all he did was sit around and do admiral stuff, and it's boring. He would rather get demoted and go run a starship. I'm just saying. Guys like that are like that.
Lava says he's pulling a Jason Rubin.
Yeah.
Which is...
May as well make the decision to see if I can go do something interesting. I would rather fail doing something interesting than succeed doing something I can't stand.
Mm.
All of us... I don't know why I'm putting a white hat on the guy right now. maybe just to shake it up a little bit, but I can't find it in myself to be particularly, you know, I don't want to wave goodbye to him and jeer at him and say a lot of nasty things. I don't want to moon him on his way out or anything like that. It's like, all right, go on, do your thing. I don't ever think it was you.
Right.
I think you were a symptom of Microsoft.
Yeah.
I don't think this was you. I kind of enjoyed laughing at you the last several weeks because you handle yourself very poorly.
Yeah.
But, you know, fine. Go turn Zynga around. You do that, nobody will be laughing, ever.
Exactly. You'll be getting offers.
It won't happen, but, you know.
All right. Well, we're going to take a break, and when we come back, we'll have more of In-Game Chat. And welcome back to In-Game Chat. Music there from Kane and Lynch. From way back when, of course, as should be expected. Next on the list of things that came about this week, and we're going to make sure Matt gets his mic set up. He had to move to another room because we were having some weird noise come through his microphone that he was using here in the studio. So he's going into another room, and we'll get him set up in a minute. But the next thing on the list was we had... Double Fine basically announced that their Kickstarter project that really blew open the door for Kickstarter in the first place, over a year ago at least, was the Double Fine Adventure Kickstarter at the time is what it was titled, and they asked for $400,000. It got over like $3 million. I don't exactly know the amount, but it got over $3 million. And it was one of those things where it's like, wow, look at what a game company can make going through an outlet like Kickstarter to get their funding for a game. And it was indies galore, indies ahoy, indies, this is great. This is where you need to go to fund your next project. It's going to happen. It's going to be good. And it's going to be glorious. And it's not enough money.
Yeah.
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 It has ballooned into something that needs more than just $3 million, apparently.
Aren't they above that, though? Isn't the $3 million and change or whatever it is just the amount of money they got from their initial Kickstarter, right? I thought that Double Fine had gone after a couple of other funding channels after getting finished with Kickstarter.
I believe that they did.
Okay. But so they should be well above, I don't know, somewhere in the neighborhood of $4 million now?
Yes.
Okay.
It's been a while since I really looked at their, the funding site, but it was well over the, what they got, the $3 million.
Yeah, it was $3.5 million, something like that, but it was close enough. But they had done that, and then he came back and said that this game has just gotten out of hand. It's gotten to a point where I've spent your $3 million. And the game is not programmed
too much, is what he said.
Yeah. He said he had over-designed. He got away from himself and he over-designed. And, I have to be fair. I don't actually know where to begin with criticism of this project or of this failure. It is, I'm not a fan of Tim Schafer. I have enjoyed some of his games, but I don't like him as a personality, and I don't like him as a personality-driven spokesman of what really is a business model. Mm-hmm. Games as art or not art, I don't really care. Games are a thing that you get paid to make. They are a product in the end. And particularly for Kickstarter, they're something that you're promising people you're going to give them. That and stretch goals and additional... extra added on stuff, but whatever. I just personally don't care for him as his weird, his quirky, his aren't I just so lovable demeanor that you forget about all the realities of stuff. I made some stuff you like, so just give me money and I'll go make some stuff. I'll design things and I'm crazy, I have weird hair and like,
I try not to fall too much into the cult of personality of when it comes
you
to
you are telling a lie right now.
I say try.
Yeah, you either don't try very hard or you are inept at whatever form of self-control that is, because you are all about cult of personality.
We have the show, I don't have it queued up, but we have the show to go back where this was first announced. And how you were on it, you were. I don't know about this Kickstarter thing, but I gave money to them, to Double Fine for this, and that's fine, whatever. But yeah. You are the only one in this. You were the only one in this room. You're the only one in that room who gave money to that initial Kickstarter, and now you hear that they need more money. Now, What was your first thought? Was your first thought, just give me the game, I'll take the 74% of it cut that you're not going to be able to... Really? That much?
Yeah.
Was it a number like that? How much was the percentage they were going to have to cut from the game?
He said, you know, in order to do it, it would be something like 74% or...
That's a ton to cut from a game that just was given $3 million. That only asked for $400,000.
Yes.
Which is where you begin to get in trouble here, because I remember I did not do my due diligence, and I didn't find the quote again. But I very specifically remember a quote all that time ago when he was talking about the money that he got from Kickstarter. And he was, I'm sure I'm injecting something evil into what he actually said because of how I feel in retrospect. But he basically said, your money doesn't really make a game. This amount of money, I can't do anything for this amount of money. Your money just gets me a meeting with a guy who has real money.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt sort of justified in the fact that I had already made up my mind about him at that point. But I very specifically remember his disposition being like, this isn't in itself a significant enough amount of money to get the design seen through all the way. But so maybe that didn't happen. Maybe his other funding channels fell through. Maybe all those meetings with all those publishers amounted to absolutely nothing. But what he had was a very specific amount of money. He had already committed himself to stretch goals. He had committed himself to whatever the game was going to be. And then he got to designing a game, apparently with no real concern for what the budget is. He just decided to run away with it. And at every point, I imagine that when he reached a certain critical point, he was like, I'm just going to have to, you know, have to make some modest changes to the game and then go back to the beggary.
And I also wonder how much, I'm not 100% sure, but how much of the money initially got from Kickstarter also went towards the documentary, because they're filming a documentary about it at the same time. And, you know, that's part of, you know, the stretch goals that, you know, you get give so much money on Kickstarter and you'll get, you know, that on Blu-ray as well. Right. And I'm sure people filming documentaries, they're not going to do it for free.
The things in the stretch goals cost money. Even t-shirts and posters and soundtracks and all of these things, custom art or any of that stuff, that all costs money.
This is actually precisely the reason you normally, when you go to decide whether you're going to back something on Kickstarter, you see what the background of the people pitching the game or the product is. And you generally want to go for people who've had lots of experience in the gaming industry, because they generally are better at managing their money and working on a budget and saying, this is going to be this much work, so we need to budget, you know, this much for it. Whereas if you go for somebody who hasn't done that before, they're not going to necessarily know how to cover all those costs, and then the t-shirts and stuff will start eating into that.
Right.
And they end up in the exact same position Tim Schafer finds himself in,
yeah,
who should know better.
I don't know what the result of suffering is going to be for anybody that's already paid into this. This was something that was actually driven back at me in my initial concerns about Kickstarter, and I will admit that I just didn't quite get it. It didn't actually click with me. It has since to some degree, although I'm still not invested in this in any way. But people made very clear, like, oh, don't worry, yeah, it's fine. Like, I know I'm not investing. I'm gambling, essentially. I'm putting my money away on this because I hope to see a thing back. And if I don't, well, that's the nature of the gamble. That's the nature of the investment. And, you know, that's fine. If you want to think about it like that, that's absolutely fine. And I don't have deep sympathies for anybody that gets hurt through this, because it is an alternative funding channel. It's very experimental. We all know that. You knew that.
As much
as you may be swept up in a lot of the garbage personality behind these sorts of things, you are at least heads up about what you're doing.
Oh yeah, I have like four games I've backed.
And I think
I'm just waiting on.
I think that most people are. But there is something that I would like to point out here, which is this has now, here we have an independent developer with an excellent pedigree that many people like, who is handed an enormous amount of money. One side of the industry is out there mocking all the complainers, saying you have absolutely no idea what things cost, and it's ridiculous for you to demand this. It's absurd for you to suggest this other thing. Just, you know, it takes money to get stuff done. And I understand that completely. But this is the result of bad management. And where in this proposition is the evil? We have a tendency to really blame people. excessively, ceaselessly, breathlessly blame the evil, faceless corporation. The developer's always the good guy, right? The developer's just trying to do his good work.
He's trying to make a story.
Yeah, it's the publisher that gets in the way. It's the management and the PR and the marketing or whatever other faceless thing that doesn't do interviews for Rock, Paper, Shotgun, right? Those guys are evil. Those are the guys we can blame when things go wrong. Well, here you have a situation where those guys aren't in charge. They have very little power. This show is essentially being run creatively. I know that's not 100% true. But what you don't see here with Tim Schafer, with this game, with what Double Fine is trying to do, you don't see the traditional management structure.
No.
All of those things that we like to blame when things go wrong. And it's going wrong. Largely because it didn't have those management entities, those stuffy personalities, the guys in ties and wingtips or whatever. I don't know, however bad guys dress in offices. But whatever that is, you don't have so much of that. And it's still, here's the problem. Bad management. And I know for a fact that one of the worst things you can possibly do is give somebody who is almost entirely artistic in their sensibilities too much money and no constraints.
No oversight.
Yeah. Oversight is extraordinarily important. You need those guys who are willing to do what we all consider to be the boring work behind the scenes and to really tighten those reins. You need production management.
Well, we talked about this whenever we brought this up a year ago, however long it was, back when we were sitting inside my house doing the show, and we brought this up and saying that, well, he's moved to Kickstarter because Brutal Legend had just been released not long ago, and it had gotten just a ton of flack for the development process of that game and everything else that went through with it, where EA was like, well, we're just not going to give you the money.
Yeah, he was very sympathetic during that process,
right?
And maybe rightfully so, I don't know, but he felt like he, or it seems to me that the prevailing opinion was that he was being used very poorly, and that he was having a hard time. And then it comes out, and it's, you know, it's what it is. Opinions are mixed, but it wasn't very good. And it's, you know, the whole process was messed up. Really wasn't his fault. How could it be? He made Grim Fandango.
Yeah, what upset me about this, because, you know, I pulled up the email again that I got from him, and, you know, it says, I think just to have an idea in my head about how big an adventure game should be, so it's hard for me to design one that's much smaller than Grim Fandango or Full Throttle. And I'm just like,
but that's not fair.
I know you're trying to pull up my heartstrings for a super fanboy that I am by mentioning, like, two games I absolutely love, but again, it's $3 million. I know for a fact, Grim Fandango, one of my favorite games of all time, did not cost $3 million to make.
See, now I can't be on your side anymore. Well, I can't. When was Grim Fandango made, Matt?
98.
Yeah.
Development was easier.
16 years ago. You can't do that. That's not fair. It is also not fair for him to make a callback to well-loved franchises and play your heart like a fiddle.
What did Grim Fandango cost?
He doesn't know. He's just sure.
Oh, okay. $3 million. I wasn't sure.
I can be sure of that, too, just based on when it was made.
Yeah, right. Of course.
Anyway, the point is, I also don't think it's fair for him to say that there are lots of people making much smaller, more tightly focused games. That's where the really hard scrabble indie guys are right now. Mm-hmm. Much, much smaller teams without any real recognition. There are lots of guys out there who can go, I'm like this guy. And nobody cares because they don't know who you are.
When you're in a traditional publisher model, this is something you can do. You can go back and be like, oh, hey, you know, my ideas are just too big. I really need more money. And they can evaluate, you know, your work and say, well, you know, based on your history and what we've seen from you so far and what you've shown us, yes or no. But that doesn't work so well when you're just raising money out in public. You've probably tapped your fans out about as much as you're going to be able to already. So I don't know where he's going to get the rest of this money to make up the shortfall.
Well, they do have a plan.
He said in the email what he's going to do. He's going to release the first part that, you know, that's finished already.
They hope to take this to Steam Early Access.
Yes, Early Access.
We should be specific. He isn't just going to release it out into the wild.
Yes.
They want to take it to he wants to make his cuts to his design. And fair to him, he is saying that, probably because a bunch of people grabbed him by his funny hair and told him, dude, you really need to less of this By like a lot. And so
back about 74% right. of you.
Right. And even in pure design and in pure fun and storytelling, I'm pretty sure that the 25% that's going to be left over is going to be decent. And I will say that I think we're more likely to get something that's less of a conflicted mess that can't... It can more easily self-identify than what we had with Brutal Legend. I can't hold him too much to account on that, because it's like one major failure in the midst of a really excellent career. So I'm even willing to look forward to the whatever portion, percent, or piece of the pie is actually left. And I'm not even particularly upset about going to Steam Early Access, because he's telling an absolute truth. He knows something about a lot of us. He knows enough to pluck your heartstrings where Grim Fandango and Full Throttle are concerned.
Completely.
He also knows that people like me are impatient, supernaturally impatient. And if he releases a portion of the game, yeah.
And then, like, you know, that gets your hooks into it. And then, like, oh, well, you know, that'll give me the money to finish it out.
Right.
And then it'll be a free. When the second part gets released, it'll be free.
Right.
So, but you're not getting that now. You're getting that when?
Well, he means now as opposed to whenever. Yeah. No time before 2014. Probably,
right, exactly.
Probably sometime next year. Yeah. But that's much sooner than we would ever see this project released.
I think
released.
He said January 2014.
Yeah, we'll see around that. We'll see about that.
But isn't it kind of interesting now to be in the position of the publisher, Matt, and be... basically asked, hey, you know, what you gave me wasn't enough. I need some more.
And now you know what it feels like to publish a Tim Schafer game.
I mean, seriously, whatever else this is, right? And I do think it is an interesting journey. You can say that he is at the forefront of both really successful Kickstarters and watching that funding arc sort of develop a lot of pitfalls.
And he gets to see the backlash of that, of what happens when he has to give that statement. Normally, I guess he just goes to a publisher and says, hey, I need more money, and they...
He wouldn't even really do that. There would be somebody over... There would be like a... There's other management things that really just free it up so that these guys can go over here and talk to the guys who code mm-hmm. and do art and make sound and make things in a really, really big... game development structure. There are people for these things. There are lots of people for these things, which I think, and this is me stepping into the world of complete speculation, I think we're likely to see several more, maybe not many more, but several more failures, like kind of guys with top-down success, guys who were at the top of the game, both in terms of quality and in terms of sales and critical reception, all mm-hmm. of these things, guys who were really at the top a long time ago and could go to the publisher and could appeal to the guys with endless pockets. Those guys are now having to downsize their expectations. They've maybe taken a sabbatical, or they've done smaller personal projects, or they just haven't worked for a while. I don't know, but we're seeing a lot of them come back into the world and have to kind of scale down what they know of where they've worked. And then at the other end of the spectrum, you have the two guys in the garage. Those guys who have no concept of this. The guys who only know Ramen Noodles and Sleepless Nights, and they are the only person they can appeal to. Not to suggest they're the only people who experience Sleepless Nights, but I think you get my point. There's the hard scrabble small teams that come up and out of nowhere, and then there's the larger teams that are made of people from the industry previously who are kind of trying to shrink down. They're both sort of occupying the same space to some extent. But whatever. What I think this is the best possible way to look at how many different ways gaming can become expensive.
Mm-hmm.
I still don't know how I feel about all this personally. A lot of this is about how I feel about Schafer, or how I felt about his project to begin with. But these things are tremendously expensive, and cost overruns can happen really quickly. Oversight is important, and the bad guy, the black hat, isn't always the guy in the back office. Sometimes without the right control, without those guys that we don't often want to believe exist, they can be the really good guys. They can be really helpful guys. And I think with more oversight, more control.
So we're reeling them in.
Production management level, which there are people whose job that is. It's the artist's job to run out to opposite ends of the universe, to expand their mind, to create and create and create and create. And if you give them... endless time and space to create in, they're never going to think, oh, but wait a minute, you know, like I'm a very artistic sort of chap, but I have a budget, so I suppose I'll stop. They don't work that way. They just don't. And you need a guy sitting right next to him saying, no. Nope, I've talked to the guys. I've talked to the guys who make this thing you want. And they say no. And I say no. And then he says, but. And then he's told no again. And that's it's just how it works. This is a business. It is very hard to control, I think. It is a very strange business. But it's. I think this was always going to happen to somebody. And I think it's interesting that it has happened, because maybe we can all stop and look at just how weird it can possibly be, how expensive and how difficult it is, and how, when you try something experimental like Kickstarter, that it can go all pear-shaped very fast.
It makes you wonder on what you've invested in since that might come back and get to you, because the first thing I'm thinking of, obviously, is Torment.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't think there's nearly as much concern from them, because they are... I feel like the belief is they're put together a little bit more like they would have been in the past. Mm-hmm. That their company is already there, kind of running itself as a company in that way. And that maybe they had seen some of what had already happened with Schaefer's Kickstarter success.
True.
I don't know. Maybe we're just all trying to pretend that it can't go that bad with them.
And another thought as well. Matt, did you also happen to back their second Kickstarter?
No, I did not. I backed some other games, but not
I was just curious.
The Dark Age, that's the only one I backed for Double Fine.
Broken Age, yes.
Broken Age, yes.
What do you think? Are you still okay with it? I mean, what do you feel?
As long as I get the game, you know, sometime next year.
As a backer, are you going to get the Steam Early Access?
Yes.
First half without paying?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, since I mean, technically, I've already paid for it.
No, I wanted to make sure that there wasn't
at least what Double
Dipping
said.
Any double dipping, which would have written this entire thing right off, I think. I just wanted make sure that was made clear.
I should get it, you know, according to the email, you know, straight off when it comes available. And he said you could download it then, or you could wait until the whole thing's available. You know, so you could do the early access and play the first part and just wait, like a cliffhanger, or you could just...
Yeah, but that's just you waiting. Which you won't do.
Has he said, again, I don't get the updates, the backer updates. Of course, they've been made public. But has he said how much he's shy that he needs? Does he know? What has he said that he's... I mean, he said he's run out of money.
Yeah.
He needs more money. Does he say we're only this much shy, or that we only need to get this amount to make it? Do we know what it's going to take to complete this game? Is where my curiosity is. My other curiosity is, would you ever back them again after this? Is this something that has shied you away from it?
Double Fine? I don't know. I want to say, you know, I'd be really, really, really hesitant. But then again, you know, you guys know me. They'd probably come out with like, hey, we're doing Grim Fandango 2. And I'm like, okay, have all my money now. You know, so I don't know. I think about this one and the three other games, you know, that I backed, and, you know, I'm just... fourth installment of, it's the fifth installment of the,
What's the name of the video game?
Serpent's Curse. The Broken Sword.
Okay.
So, you know, the fifth installment of that, Wasteland 2, and also Star Citizen.
Okay.
So, I get updates on those, and I guess they're coming out. It's all, I think all of them, with the exception of Star Citizen, is taking a little bit longer than they initially said. Whereas, you know, Chris Roberts, you know, he was just like, this is going to be done a couple years from now.
Yeah. All right. This whole thing isn't over. This is not over. I don't even think it's a bad thing that what he's doing. I'm not even personally upset because I'm not a backer. I just think that it's a bit of a mess, but I kind of like that it's there because it's a unique mess. It's the first time we've really had this.
Yeah.
And I think that's really helpful and instructive and illuminating in a lot of different ways. And I have to tell you, whatever sort of garbage we've convinced ourselves over the last several years, I would prefer an ideal version of the traditional publishing model over an ideal version of this kind of funding model. And I think neither of those things is likely. And I don't think this is the end of the road. I don't think it's either the traditional model or this model. I think there is some kind of possibly hybridized thing out there in the future. I don't know. This is not an end. This is kind of a process, but
could be something like the free-to-play model. Where
it could be.
We put it out there, and then we have these charges in-game, and your money you spend on there funds
right.
the further
and
development
the investment
of this.
Where or early access stuff is an interesting thing mm-hmm. as well. And I don't really know. But I don't think as much ire as there might be about what is happening right now with this, I don't really think it's fair to say that I would or would not trust them. I don't know. I think at the very least we should see exactly how much of the design makes it through? How much game actually
have
makes
you,
it
have
through?
Have you backed anything on Kickstarter at all?
Nope.
Just curious.
Yeah. Nope.
Jeremy?
No.
RJ?
The only thing I had was a contribution to Skullgirls on Indiegogo a while back when they needed, I think it was $250,000. They got that in like one day. We ended up giving them around $875,000 to further the development of the game. And it's looking pretty good right now. But, Matt, I had a question for you.
Yep.
Did you get anything for contributing to this through those three projects?
So far, the only thing I've received two things in the mail so far.
Okay.
My Star Citizen, like little card, you know, that gives you your player ID number, and it's a little silver card and whatever. And I got a Double Fine poster.
Okay.
The rest of it's going to be when the games are available.
Okay, because the Skullgirls promotion they gave, they said if you give a certain amount, you get these things, like $5 you get this, $10 you get that. I think the best one, what everyone was aiming for, there was if you give $1,000, you have the rights to help design a character for the game that we can put in. That sold out real quick, but I don't think anything's come of it as of late.
Yeah, generally on anything Kickstarter, I probably won't put money into it unless there's a tier where I get the product itself.
Mm-hmm.
When I put in, I think I backed about five or six projects. Two of those failed, never came through.
Yeah. It all sounds like a crapshoot, really. I mean, just going on someone's word that it's going to come out anyway.
Yeah. Yeah. One is, one I've already gotten the rewards from was, it was a pinball table in the pinball arcade series of games.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's the only one that's come through. Everything else is still way off in the distance of when it's going to actually... And Torment was another one that I put into as well. So, especially the one where you get Wasteland 2 and Torment together. I went ahead and did that. So, but anyway, we got to take a break here. And then when we come back, we'll have the second hour of In-Game Chat. We'll be right back. And welcome back to In-Game Chat. Any hint, any clue, any idea? Go back to the years, of course, when we started doing all this.
Mega Man?
Metroid.
That's always my answer if I don't know.
Matt, any idea?
No, I'm trying to figure it out.
No, I'm stumped.
Yeah, it's from N+.
Oh, okay.
Wow. Yeah.
I remember that show.
A while.
You remember that show?
Yeah. I sat right here.
Oh, that show. That's right. We had him on the show. I was
yes,
like,
we did.
You remember that show? It's a game. It's not a show. No. Makes sense. Goodness. I couldn't go back that far.
I played it on the DS.
Yeah, I actually picked it up on the DS as well.
So the music.
And I believe that they've decided to do a sequel to that. If I read correctly, weeks and weeks and weeks ago. One of those things that you just kind of...
They should kickstart it.
Exactly.
I might back them.
I want my likeness in the game.
Right. It would just be a stick figure with
That's
like...
That's funny because the game has a stick figure in it, in case anybody hasn't played the game.
With a gray top on his head or something. So, anyway, welcome back to the show. A couple other things in the news that we had this week. Gears of War producer had quit Epic to go work on Mass Effect 4.
Is there really anything left to do with Gears of War?
B, is there
really anything left to do with Mass Effect?
Yeah.
There are plenty of things I think you can do with Mass Effect. I don't think that any of them can happen with a 4 at the end.
No.
Does that make sense?
Yeah,
there are a lot of
sense, yeah.
There are a lot of things I really want. I want all the things that people hate me for wanting. I want, like, a massive online game. I want it to become more of a shooter and less of an RPG.
Mass Effect Black Flag. I want to be a space pirate. How about that?
That would actually be... That would be, you know, having no problems ever, really... Really, with the world and the story, and well, with the story in particular of Mass Effect, it was, you know, whatever. It was like, I mean, but it was. Like, it really was. It had some high points, had some fantastic characters. It had what is one of my favorite spaceships in it, because I got a thing for spaceships. But I love the universe. I want there to be something. I wish that the course of that arc hadn't done so much to just... I don't know, like, spoil the universe
right.
of Mass Effect. I wish they had just left, whatever, spoilers and stuff, but I don't know, you'll hate the ending anyway if you haven't played it. I wish that everything had just been left the way it was.
I thought you just said it in the future.
But how far in, I mean, really, how far into the future would you be able to go in the Mass Effect universe to sort of, like, unwind the whole mess that they made of the universe? And I guess that was my real problem, is that I want just Shepard, go away. Like, all this stuff, go away. Just stop it. And just leave, like, the gates and the planets and the people and the races and the things, you know? And just give me, like, a massive... give me an MMO. I'm sorry. I'll just say that. That's what I want. You can write angry emails or anything. I don't know. I don't care.
What if it would be like fantastic. An MMO that's a prequel before, you know, the Reapers and everything? That way you do get...
You have a really, really narrow time frame if that's the case. You have like less than a generation if you really want to introduce humans into it and the existing conflict or something.
I was about to say jump ahead about 2 centuries or so, something like that.
Which, again, might be possible if we really understood what they were doing about the endings. Mm. You know, if they were really rebuilding the old mass relay network, and then you would have to make assumptions about which ending is the canonical ending. Mm. And all of them result in sort of a mess. But it's not unprecedented. I still think whatever it has actually grown into, that World of Warcraft did an excellent job of taking one type of story and evolving it into another type. And it's a thing that I had always wanted, because I like eternally living online worlds. But I don't even know that that's exactly what I want out of it. I know that the most fun I had, at least out of Mass Effect 3, was the multiplayer. It was fantastic. So,
BioWare doesn't exactly have a stellar record with MMOs, though.
You're really right. They have actually one of the worst records in the history of the world, because... The Old Republic is a really dreadful video game. So, yeah, I don't know. See, there I go again, doing what I tell people not to do. I would not
thinking
get what
you'd
I
get
want.
What you wanted.
Yeah, look, I'm going to tell you, you're never going to get what you want on purpose. If you ever get what you want, it's because of an accident or because you are easily pleased. But just, or you are, fine. You have put yourself in a position to be satisfied with whatever you're given. Is that more diplomatic? The point is that just because you backed a project, just because you paid for money, just because you mowed lawns and, you know, earned the scratch to actually buy the video game, none of this means you're ever going to get what you want. You're going to get what they give you. So we would manage our own expectations, I think, is what I'm supposed to say. So I don't know. But if I'm refusing to manage my expectations, what I want is a magical... Mass Effect expanded universe, extended universe, MMO, and I get to fly the Normandy. It's my ship and mine alone. That's what I want. I don't know, but apparently, whatever, we're going to put a 4 after it because that needs to be done.
Possibly, I know the article says it's probably not what it's going to be called, but it's too early.
It'll be subtitled.
Yeah, you know, just Mass Effect, the early years or something like that. I don't know. Something
Tales from Mass Effect.
Who knows? But now
that could actually be pretty good. Not for nothing.
Yeah.
But now a former guy from Epic will be working on.
Well, I have enjoyed the Gears of War franchise so little that I'm really looking forward to it.
You are so hopeful for what's going to come.
I don't like them and their company anymore and what they do. So, no, I'm actually not very hopeful.
What else do we have? Jack Tretton had an interesting interview with, I believe it was IGN, or the Up at Noon show, podcast, whatever that is. But he really talked about some of the things that went on at Sony's press conference for E3 beforehand, and how his observation of what Microsoft did, and just kind of how it felt, where they had done rehearsals for it and everything else, and nothing had changed in between Microsoft's reveal and Sony's reveal. Nothing had changed. Everything was going to go the way that it was going to go.
Smiles on faces.
Yeah, exactly.
That's about it. There's no way. You can't turn that around. You cannot turn it around that quickly.
Yeah.
The one thing I'm willing to believe was anything like a last-minute decision, and in this case, last-minute was probably a matter of weeks, maybe a couple of short months, is whether or not to include the camera in absolutely every box.
Well, it's interesting, you know, that we find out that the camera tech demo is
actually, that tech demo that we enjoyed so much at E3 is actually going to be included on every PS4.
All right.
Which leads you to think that
at some point
that
they were
the
at least entertaining the notion of keeping the, well, certainly pretty far along to thinking about putting the camera in absolutely every box. And they obviously thought it was a big enough deal, because at every place at E3, when you could find pictures of the actual hardware sitting out,
it was always shown together
with
the camera.
Being accompanied by the camera. The feeling really was that the camera was going to be packed in. So I think it's probably good that they didn't. We know that it allowed them to drop the price. We also know that it is now presented as an option. Unless at some point in time later they go to a 100% pack-in on this thing. What we do know is that the argument posed by a lot of people who are pro-Kinect is that, well, now all developers will have access to it. They can assume the presence of a Kinect in absolutely every Xbox One. So they don't have to wonder whether it's worth their time to develop for a particular piece of hardware that only a very small percentage of people have. Nope. If you want to make a Kinect 2 game, then everybody that has an Xbox One is going to have a Kinect 2 in it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's that simple. Whether that actually translates into anything real or not, I don't know. I mean, the PS3 had 6-axis controls, right? And those were hardly in everything in the world. So
they started out that way.
Right.
And then it was quickly, it just wasn't something that people wanted.
Right.
And they had enough backlash of, like, stop doing this.
Just because it's something everybody has doesn't mean it's something everyone wants to do.
Mm-hmm. Right. And when you are looking at, like we've talked about in the last hour, the various budgeting and time constraints of making a game, you really have to think about how important are the Kinect features. I really just want to get a tightly coded, well-built, really good game out the door. And I've already got enough trouble doing that. How much of that time do I want to spend bringing in aspects of the Kinect? Maybe the simple ones, and maybe that becomes kind of modular and really easy for people to do, but I don't know. In any case, I've got the camera on reserve. Don't even know why.
Yeah, I had you put it on reserve as well.
Yeah. But you didn't. I did it for you.
Or you did, yeah, and I was like, oh, that's fine.
I was like, oh, a camera.
How much is it going to be?
It's like 60, I think.
Okay.
Yeah. So yeah, I'm fine with that too.
But anyway, the point is, that's the closest thing to a last minute decision I think they made, and I think that was done weeks in advance. You know, it's like it was what it was. You take it to show, see who wins. Just because they won so big doesn't mean that they. Just because it looks like they were reacting completely to Microsoft's press conference doesn't mean they were.
Yeah. Dennis in the chat room has a question for James. Did you play any Final Fantasy 13, or were you burdened with Witcher guilt this week?
No, this week was... I did not play any FF13. That's like a thing.
I saw everybody add FF7 to their wish list, though.
Well, for a second while I answer his question. No, it was no FF13. It was Witcher, although Scott is actually well ahead of me at this point in Witcher.
Which is amazing.
Because he's cheating. I also had to restart my State of Decay
game. Mm.
I'd left it sitting for too long. I suffered greatly. I was willing, absolutely willing, to suffer the loss of Marcus because I was foolish. But after the two patches, they released like two patches in a pretty short span of time. One that fixed an awful lot of bugs. Another one that seems to have helped improvement an awful lot. Or performance improvement.
Mm-hmm.
I decided to go back and restart that. So I've been giving some time to that every single day as well. And I don't know why, but I can't keep my hands off of the Final Fantasy 14 beta.
Oh, the MMO. That's right.
It's painfully traditional. It's like really, really traditional. It is right-click on things on the ground and do fetch quests from here to there and kill X number of these things and like then put on some gear. And I really like it. And I know that there's no way to really justify that. But it's like it's so easy. It's so comfortable, you know? It's like pulling on a Snuggie and and sitting down and watching a great show or something like that. At least that's what I use these things for. I sort of mindlessly do the one thing over here while I mindlessly do another thing, you know, on the television or something like that. It's very automatic. It doesn't require an awful lot of thought on my part, but it's very good, it's very smooth, it's clean, it runs well, it's kind of fun. I like what small little quirks the game actually has that sets it apart from other things. I'm really debating actually picking it up on launch and finding some people to play with. It's impressed me a little bit, and I know a lot of people care nothing for it because it isn't trying something new.
Mm-hmm.
I would point you towards a short and recent history of trying something new in the MMO space and how that hasn't actually worked out very well.
True.
Unless you really, really know what you're doing and you're really on top of it. But point being, no FF13 yet. I need to be good. I need to put one or two other things away before I start that.
I know the feeling. Yeah.
I've got to do something about Witcher before I can do something about that.
I'm the same way. If I have a chance... and there's Dennis asking me if I'm enjoying Alan Wake. He's paying attention to what I'm playing. But if I have a chance on the PC where I'm not playing Alan Wake, then I'm playing Witcher. But I got back into Alan Wake just because me and the girlfriend had done the episodic gaming. We picked up Walking Dead 400 Days. That's the first thing we tackled, and we'll be talking about that here in a little bit. But once we got done with that, I was like, is there anything else you're interested in, that sort of stuff? And she was interested in the episodic type things. She kind of likes, and I kind of agree with her, I kind of like the chunk of gameplay here that has a beginning and it has an end. You know, if you just give me the game, I don't really necessarily know where to stop sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
when playing something. So something like that that has an episodic feel to it, where you do this and it's done, and you can play the next episode if you want. Because that was her first question when we were done. She's like, "Okay, how long do we have to wait for the next episode?" And I was like, "Oh no, it's all here. We got the whole thing." So we burned through the first three episodes in one night on Alan Wake. So I'm enjoying it. I played it on the 360 when it released. For some reason, and then that was in 2010, I believe, when Alan Wake released.
Finally.
Yeah, it was 2010. Played it on the 360. Stopped at the beginning of Chapter 3.
And is that the part where you're making your way through the woods? Or the part where you're... What was the other thing you do in that? Oh, you make your way through the woods, yeah. Which one was that, by the way?
It was both.
Okay.
It was both. And yeah, I can tell you, I'm really... you really start to feel that grind of, here we go again. We're doing this woods thing. They don't freshen it up enough. At least, again, I'm only three episodes in out of a six. I'm halfway through out of a six episode story. If you don't count the DLC or the American Nightmare, I guess, kind of expansion or whatever that was. But you start to feel that grind of, okay, I'm going to do a couple of things in the daylight here, and then it gets dark, and I'm going to have to make my way through the woods. That's all it's going to be. And it does, it gets grindy and gets a little bit of annoying. Episode 3 seemed like it went on for far too long, and I got really annoyed with that.
I really wish you would have spent more time in Bright Falls, just because I would love to have just, you know, explored around that little, you know, town, because it had that, I mean, definite smacks of Twin Peaks. And I just want to, like, you know, just walk around there and, like, talk to the, you know, the crazy inhabitants and, you know, do more of that instead of, you know, taking a nature trail through the woods.
Well, and I really like action games. I'm generally really, really like them, but I can't believe that's what this game was. This game needed to be an adventure game. It really, really did, with light action. This game would have been better built the way that The Walking Dead is. to be honest with you. There's a lot of really intriguing things here. There's a lot of strange personal developments. There's a lot of creepy story stuff, and I think it would have been far, far better if it was something more, not a traditional adventure game, but something like what adventure games are trying to be now in their rebirth. And the fact that it is just some kind of straightforward action game is depressing, because it's tedious. It's ridiculously tedious. It has wonderful atmosphere, but there's just really nothing in it that I want to do. It's a chore to me.
Yeah, well, I'm still playing with a 360 controller on the PC, but for some reason I am a whole lot better than what I remember back in 2010.
Mm-hmm.
I was not very good.
But you're also playing the PC version.
And I'm also playing the PC version. I don't know if controls got tightened or controls
they feel that way, because I was in the same situation. I started replaying it on the PC with the gamepad.
You were playing. Okay, I didn't know if you'd gone, because you can do mouse and keyboard.
I had tried it both ways.
Okay. I wasn't sure. Well, then yeah. So it's looks great, plays great. I'm enjoying it so far. I got 3 episodes to go. I'm hoping I don't run into anything like what episode 3 was. Not necessarily a bad episode, just went on way too long, I thought. I thought there was a point where they could split this up. Because there is, so far in the game, episode 1 has you going from daylight to darkness it gives you a full day-night cycle type thing, almost 24 hours, because at the end, dawn is coming up and everything else is whatever, and so that's how the episode ends. Same thing happens with 2. You go through a daylight period, walk through the woods and do your thing, and then daylight comes back, and that's the end of the episode. Episode 3 does the same thing. However, when you come back to daylight, the episode does not end. It has to go through another dark period, another nighttime section. Where you're walking through the woods, then a coal mine and everything else, and so it just feels like it goes on way too long. So hopefully don't run into that again. However, it does come with trading cards, which I was not aware of. So now I got 2 extra.
I don't know what to do with that.
I don't either. I got 2 extra cards that I'm like, I'd like to give somebody one of these cards so I could trade you for one that I don't have. There's this inherent feeling of saying, I have an extra one, I don't want that extra one. Somebody take it so I can have one of the others.
Yeah, I did the thing where I left my games on that had the trading card drops and accumulated my trading cards. Anything I got duplicates of, I put on the their little Steam store where mm-hmm. you can sell your stuff. And most of those sold, and I ended up with a...
Really? They did sell?
Yeah.
It just, I went to that store, and it just seems oversaturated with stuff. I don't see how... But then, I don't know. I guess it's one of those things that you really can't picture in your mind how many people use Steam in relation to, you know, what's there on the marketplace for them to buy.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't know. Maybe that's what I'll do with my extra Alan Wake card. I did create a thread in our Steam group.
I saw that.
For people to, you know, go and switch through cards and everything else that they want to. But
well, we're talking about what we played, though. I was going to play Last of Us, and for various reasons, I wasn't able to get started on that. I'm going to start that tonight. But... in lieu of being able to start it, I started playing Tropico 3, which I picked up on one of those bundle sales. Because several people on Reddit recommended it in a thread where people had been talking about SimCity 4, and they said it was just a fantastic alternative to SimCity 4 if a SimCity thing was what you were looking for, and 4 didn't fit the bill. And so I fired it up, and I've been really, really sucked into it. I haven't really been big into a city management game since, I don't know, the first SimCity on PC and Super Nintendo. So for it to get its hooks into me like it did is really something. It's really fun. You start off with like a, you know, you got an island, and however you came to power, if you play sandbox mode, you can kind of pick, you know, your various attributes as the El Presidente of your island. You start with about 50 people and basically no industry or economy to speak of, and you start trying to build that up, and it takes place like starts off in the 70s and moves forward, so you're also working your way through the Cold War and managing relations with the U.S. and the Soviet Union, and there's various political groups on the island that you try to keep happy or satisfied, and if any groups get unsatisfied enough, you can have to deal with rebels.
Tropico always seemed like the city building section of Just Cause 2.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's what it always felt like. Like you can play Just Cause 2 and whoever's built your city or whatever the case. It has that same sort of feeling of the sure. island and where it's at. Definitely not the same sort of feeling in gameplay or anything like
no,
that.
No.
Can't do that crazy stuff with Tropico, but
that would be really cool.
Yeah.
Wouldn't it?
But that's kind of, does it have trading cards?
No, it doesn't
have trading cards. I wasn't sure.
Okay, is this what we're going to do for a while now?
No. It's really not. It's not.
Is it going to be a thing for a while?
It's not. But now every time I see somebody playing something, I'm like, I wonder if that has cards in it. Because Alan Wake, I didn't even know it had it.
Maybe 4 does. I don't know.
I saw Ravenlock playing Burnout Paradise, and I thought, I wonder if that's got cards too. I'd be all over that one if it had some cards with it. So, but anyway, what else? I played Witcher. Yes, I'm ahead of you. I switched it to easy.
You downloaded mods, switched it to easy. You cheat and have a person BAMF right next to you so you can sell things and access your inventory, but you haven't cheated.
I haven't used any of that yet, actually.
Oh, okay.
I have downloaded them, but I haven't actually used
them. I desperately need this thing, he texts me, and then come to find out he's downloaded it but not used it. Sure.
I haven't used it yet. No, I haven't used it, but yes, I am cheating to make things a little bit more convenient. We are, again, just doing this, trying to get through this game to get us through to Witcher 2, and there are some nice conveniences. I don't necessarily like running back to the end to drop off all my stuff or to go pick up something to continue a conversation with somebody else. It's just nice to have that right there when you need it. But anyway, yes, Final Fantasy VII on Steam. I mean, you put it in there, your wish list.
Well, I mean, yeah, everybody should put it in there. Yeah. So $12 is what they're selling it for. It's identical to the version that was sold on the Squeenix store last year, which, you know, isn't great. Still requires a sign-in and check-in with their launcher system. It still has the really bad sound issues, which
can
be
fixed.
That's what
I heard.
It's fine. Most of the problems can be modded away, and it can be modded into a relatively decent version of itself. It's got the character booster cheat thing, so you don't really have to worry about grinding or any of that. You can just simply give your character, I imagine, whatever level or whatever amount of power or whatever item you need.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure. I don't think that's a bad thing. If you're going back through it to see it again and you want to just diminish the actual grindy gameplay of it, you know, that's fine. There's plenty of story, plenty of exploration and other things to do in there. But I don't know. It goes in the wish list, but I didn't buy it. It's $12.
Damn.
And I didn't buy it, so
I have it on the PlayStation 3. I got it on the PS Store a while back ago, you know, and put it on my PSP for like a portable
You
know, version. Yeah, and I started playing a little bit of it again. You know, I'm at the part where you have to actually dress up as the girl to, you know, get with the
with the honeybee?
Cornea.
Yeah. So that, you know, that's where I was at, and I just sort of, you know, put it down. I haven't played it, you know, since then.
It's a lot of game. I don't think it's not meant to be played again. It's just meant to be sort of adored every now and then.
But if it gets to $5, you're grabbing it?
Probably.
Yeah.
Maybe.
I'm thinking of the Steam sale likely next week when we're getting that thing in and seeing what's going to be on sale. Anyway, we got to take a break. When we come back, we'll have the final segment of the show. Going to talk about some Walking Dead 400 Days. All of that coming up next here on Endgame Chat. We'll be right back. So you got to go back. This is an Xbox Live game, Xbox Live Arcade title.
From years ago.
Yes, we had a lot of fun playing this.
Explosion Man?
No,
this isn't Explosion Man. This was a multiplayer game that we had a lot of fun playing. It was completely free.
Aegis Wing?
That's it.
Okay.
That is the
I forgot
one.
That was free.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was completely free. It was like a team, like a school project or something that somebody had, they made, and I guess maybe they won the rights for them to be published on Xbox Live Arcade or something like that. I can't remember the exact backstory on that, but I do remember it being free. And that is music from the game.
I don't remember the music at all, but I remember playing it.
So you got it on clues alone then, not really the music there. Trust me, look, if I was on the other side of this and you guys were doing this, I wouldn't know any of them. Even the Mega Mans, I would not know. So, exactly. That's what Dennis is wondering is what that was. Well, now we told you. Coming up, we're going to have a spoiler discussion here about Walking Dead 400 Days. We had a question in the chat room to know if we would have any spoilers for the Walking Dead Season 1. In this segment, we think we can do it without that. If we start to run in that, we will certainly give you a heads up. But we're pretty sure that we can discuss 400 days really without spoiling anything, because there isn't much.
It's all very internal, but there isn't an awful lot going on inside of 400 days. Mm-hmm. It's got very little to do, I think, with season one. We have no idea about season two at this point.
Right.
So we don't know how this is going to feed into it. I don't really know what spoilers would be in this, other than you play some people, so zombies are involved. Is anything beyond that something you don't want to hear?
Right.
I really don't know.
It's really not, because any of the main characters that you play, if they die, your game is over. And you have to restart anyway. So okay. It's not one of those situations where your choice decides the fate of so-and-so and so-and-so during your game. In fact, everything seems to lead to, and I guess this is true of almost anything, everything seems to lead to the end game, that little epilogue section.
Right.
Every choice
the
you make.
The 400th day.
Yeah, every choice you make leads up to the 400th day, when the recruiting comes about as to what we think may lead into season two. We really right. don't know. This just could be, seriously, we don't know. With as much as the integration that they put in from season one into this, it makes me wonder, like, how much is that, what are you doing with season two? How
does
much
this
is
have
that?
Anything to do with anything? Did you just put this together when you realized how badly we wanted more?
Yeah.
More Walking Dead? That seems a little bit ridiculous, because it's only about an hour of gameplay, maybe less. There are no puzzles to solve. You're playing through five individual stories, each one taking, 10 minutes maybe.
I mean, yeah.
Maybe 10 minutes. Each one taking place at a different point along the road to 400 days after the event. And each one being primarily a little bit of dialogue, maybe a small action segment, a little bit of movement, very little in terms of analyzing the environment, no puzzle solving, no item management,
mm-hmm.
and it's very much straightforward. It is, in some cases, a very, kind of artistic little slice of what these people were probably going through as individuals. You don't really understand what happened to them immediately before you met them. They're intentionally cryptic about that.
Yeah.
And in a lot of cases, you're not sure what happened afterward, or not immediately afterward. You see the result of some of their story, but a lot of it isn't given in detail. And how each one of them is related to the other is subtle in most cases, and it can be difficult to pick up on.
Really, I picked up on a few here and there, but not many, because playing them out of sequence.
And there is a sequence. It's not deliberate. It's not enforced. There are five stories. You can choose them however you want. And before you pick them, you don't really know what the order is supposed to be. But there is an order, a chronological order. The earliest story taking place 2 days after the apocalypse, and the latest taking place
250 some odd days after.
Okay. And then it all culminating down at 400 days.
At 400, yeah. Actually, I might be wrong. It's 230 some odd days after. The 250 is one of those stretches of times within the story. Fades to black 200 some odd days since Outbreak. And,
right.
You know, since day zero. but yes, there is an order. You will be, if you've played Walking Dead Season 1, and really I don't know why you would be playing this if you haven't, given that it's just, there's so much there for you to do. But the first story that you likely may play, the first story chronologically that you can play, is Vincent's story. Girlfriend was as well. When that story was over, we were surprised at how fast.
That one really did seem to go fast. The entire thing took place in a prison bus.
Yeah.
Well, not the entire thing.
Right.
The introduction took place in what appeared to be Macon, mm-hmm. from the first game.
Yeah. But as soon as that one was over, we got out of the bus and we thought, all right,
that's it.
Here we go. And then it just, and I thought, oh, wow, that's quick.
Yeah.
That would then it really kind of hit me there of like, this is going to be a fast one. This is going to be a really quick playthrough. I don't even remember.
It may have been the shortest. I think it was maybe tied for the next in sequence.
Mm-hmm.
The one where you're the hippie. I don't know.
Wyatt.
Yeah.
The next one in that series is Wyatt. And again, my first playthrough was Wyatt was almost next to last when I got to him.
Mm-hmm.
The first playthrough for us was Vincent, and then Shell, Russell, Wyatt, and Bonnie,
mm-hmm.
which is not going in that order. Really, was nothing. As soon as I played it in order, the way you're supposed to, things just clicked all over the place as to where this was.
It's a little interesting to me that they would let you do it out of order.
Yeah,
that they wouldn't actually create small chapters within. Not that I have a problem with it, but I played it out of order as well, about half.
Mm-hmm.
And talking to you about it, I understood a lot more where that subtlety was, the subtle interconnections, the events leading one to another, because they are all interconnected in some small way.
How far was it until you realized that there was a order to kind of
I think
do
probably
it in?
I think maybe the second one that I played, I did Wyatt, then Russell, which that is in order, but it's with one another, but it's mm-hmm. out of order from the beginning.
Yeah.
And so I understood that, okay, like, I think this thing should be this way, and I sort of understand that this person, an antagonistic character that you meet in both of those stories, possibly has something to do with what's going on. And, like, I passed the diner / gas station in one story. I'm in it in another one. In a third story, I'm...
You come upon it.
You come upon it. In a fourth, you see it out the back of the bus.
Yeah.
And in a fifth one, you are actually there.
Mm-hmm.
But not necessarily in that order. And you think that there's something maybe particular about it, but there doesn't really appear to be. There is no significant connection to the first game. I'm guessing that there can't be an enormous connection to the second game, given the way that 400 Days ends. Where any mixture of the five people can either choose to be a part of this recruitment effort or not. They can stay or they can go, depending on how you played and how you responded in the conversation at the end of the game. So I have to believe that this is something that's, knowing them and knowing what they do, they're very good at making you feel like you've made enormous contributions when you actually haven't.
Let me tell you, that curtain falls off fast when you give it a couple of playthroughs. You know, even a second playthrough of making different decisions, that curtain of I'm making significant choices in this game really sheds its skin. There are, from what I've read on forums and from what I've actually done, there are certain things that need to take place in each story. Usually one thing that needs to take place in each story in order for you to either recruit them at the end or have them stay. But there's usually one single decision that you can make in the story that will make that happen. That I can tell. I haven't dipped that far into it, because you do need the game disc to play 400 Days, I found out. You don't just need to save the game, have a save on your system, and then download the DLC content. You actually have to have the first game in order to play 400 Days. I didn't realize that.
And you didn't buy it as a download.
And I didn't. I went to Redbox and got it. So I had to go back to Redbox, pick up the game, and do it. So I got my playtime out of it before I incurred a second charge on the rental. Went through it two times. Played Wyatt's about seven times.
Because of you were trying to lose at Rock, Paper, Scissors. There's a Rock, Paper, Scissors thing in the car. In the middle of the zombie apocalypse, two hippies are playing Rock, Paper, Scissors to see if they should get out and decide whether the thing they just ran over was like a dude or a zombie. Just to give you an idea about what's going on in Wyatt's story.
Yeah. I played that thing so much. I went through all the different dialogue branches that there were leading up to that point. And then as soon as I lost, or as soon as I won at the game, it was like, oh, stop, restart the game, is what I would do. So
But given the variations in the ending, the number of people who can stay or go, I think it's probably going to be a contributing factor to who you run into in the second game, but I don't think it's going to have anything to do with who you play, since any two of us can have completely different contributions at the end. And that's fine. I never actually minded the how little control I actually had over the story. I didn't mind that terribly. I like that it was tailored slightly to my decisions, and I like that I even made some decisions that I didn't agree with in retrospect. Mm-hmm. I don't mind that at all. So, really, this was $5 for some more Walking Dead. It felt good. It wasn't the same as The Walking Dead. It wasn't like an episode out of the first series, but the art was right, the sound was right, the mood was right. It gave you that same sense of dread and unease. I thought it was fine. If it's something that you like, if the game is something that you have liked, there are worse ways to spend $5. And just to have, you know, a taste, the memory of what The Walking Dead is in some form.
Yeah, which a lot of people are clamoring for, considering we're probably not getting Season 2 until much later. Which is another aspect to bring up, something I realized in everybody's discussion of, hey, where are you playing this? So I'm grabbing it on the PS3, or I'm grabbing it on the... You know, we talked about the release date timing. It was... The PSN was on Tuesday.
Right, the Xbox wasn't until Friday.
Yeah. Steam was on Wednesday. Mm-hmm. Nobody got a Thursday release. And then Friday, it was out on Xbox Marketplace, which seems very strange. Normally, I thought that stuff would release on Wednesday for Xbox. But
well, when it traditionally does. Sony usually gives their PSN updates on Thursdays.
Mm-hmm.
And Xbox Live updates on Wednesdays. And the PC traditionally gets things on...
Tuesday.
Well, whichever day. But Tuesday is really common.
Yeah.
But yeah, having thought about that, you now have save games for The Walking Dead Season 1 and 400 Days
on the PS3.
Your PS3.
Which, from everything that we have been told and know about...
This Season 2 will be out after...
New consoles.
Yeah, the new consoles. So,
which they may... I'm sure they'll have a release on the old consoles. Those will be around, for them to release. They may have a release on the new consoles. I just... My saves will not transfer.
If you choose to pick it up on the new console, which you will, because you're Scott.
Or I wonder if, to combat that, they'll just release it digitally on the PSN.
Of course they'll release it digitally. Yeah, they already did.
So then you'd be able to download, the new app. Wouldn't you be able to use that?
I can't use my saves.
It's his save games that we're talking about, not being able to import.
Any of my decisions will not carry over.
Don't know that for sure. We don't know exactly how they're going to access your old saves. But there is every reason to believe that if you have existing saves on the Xbox or the PS3, that when The Walking Dead Season 2 comes out, presumably on the new consoles, it won't be able to access the saves on your old console to determine, your starting position and all of the little parameters that they want to determine. The PC will be fine.
Yeah, PC's gonna do fine. So you'll be okay.
Put it on the wish list on Steam.
Oh, I've got it on. I don't have 400 Days, but I do have Walking Dead Season 1.
Why did you play it on the PS3 then?
Why did I play? Oh, because she was getting heavy into Walking Dead at the time. I was like, there's a game, and I was looking for games that we could play together.
Okay, I understand.
And I was like, hey, let me go rent it, and that's fine. And so we got to play it there. But I had bought, it was either during a Steam sale or something. I think it was down to like $12 or $10 or something like that on a Steam sale, and I picked it up. So, I've got it on
PS. Well, now you just have to do the work of actually playing through again.
Yeah. And that's fine. I can do that. I can't remember some of the decisions we made in Season 1 to see if I could go a different route for my next playthrough of that. But I did play through 400 Days a second time. Again, Wyatt's story a lot more than two times. But still, the whole thing went through a second time, trying out different decisions and realizing, again, that ultimately it is this one single section of everybody's story that's going to determine the outcome of the epilogue of that situation, of whether you go with Tavia or you stay at the camp, one or the other. And
fun figuring that out.
Yeah, exactly. Your favorite story, any particular character you enjoyed more than the others?
No, I didn't like them. I didn't like any of these people. And that's actually, I've heard that from a number of people. Mm-hmm. But, you spend how many hours with Lee and Clementine?
No kidding. Yeah.
An enormous amount of time. You learn why they are who they are. And I think you could make an argument for the fact that Lee actually wasn't a very good character. He was just kind of your guy, and you felt that maybe he had a raw deal, you know, and he's doing a good job by looking after Clementine.
You were making decisions more for Clementine than you actually were for Lee.
In this, you're given seconds to figure out who these people are and try to figure out exactly what kinds of decisions you should be making on their behalf. And I always, when given a character, not somebody that's me, but a character, I try to make decisions as that character would, because I feel like that's most likely how they've been written. And that's, you know, that was sort of, that's sort of difficult when you're shown to be a, hey, you know, I'm a gun shooting murder guy. Here I am in a bus with what I'm led to believe is a rapist and a Wall Street banker. Like, I don't know if I'm being presented with some sort of really complicated allegorical thing here, but I have to sort of choose between them and react appropriately to each of them. And then suddenly zombies, like I was, I don't know. Like, this guy is okay, the guy that I'm playing. I believe him when he makes his excuses for committing murder, but I'm given less time with him than anyone else. So I think maybe he's the one I enjoyed the most. Wyatt, I think I enjoyed a little bit. He's really good at getting in rock, paper, scissors ties.
Yeah. Well, look at Russell when you talk about not knowing the character. Look at Russell. Starts off on the road, you get no backstory of this kid. Mm-hmm. And immediately you have a decision to either, there's an oncoming car, and immediately you have the decision to either
hide
or stand your ground and talk to whoever's driving this car. You have no idea what kind of person this kid is, other than he's a kid. That's all you get from it. What's he going to do? So it's a little difficult to put yourself in that situation of, I'm going to make a choice right now for this person that I have no idea what he would do.
And how did both of you guys handle that situation?
Well, he played through everything twice, so.
Yeah, but I like to go.
But like your initial time.
Exactly. I like to go.
I hid because I'm a kid and that's a scary truck. It's got lots of lights on it. He's a kid alone. Turns out it's a zombie apocalypse. I hid.
Did you do the same?
No, I stood the ground and approached him and was honest with him, actually.
Well, that's interesting that, you know, you guys played it differently, you know, your initial playthrough and everything.
But I wish I would have played it the way James did the first time, although I did it, again, you can go back and redo these, but I would have gotten a...
It's the one little Easter egg from the first game.
Yeah.
If you choose to hide.
Is that why also it requires the save or in the previous the first season?
Best we so can that tell. Way,
that's why it has.
It could tell
now.
You. Yeah, it could tell you which, you know, who you're hiding behind.
Right.
Okay.
It wants it to be that way for your game, and I appreciate those things.
Yeah.
It's the tailoring that they talked about. They don't talk about you crafting the story on your own. Merely that the story as it is tailored to fit your preferences. So, yes, hiding behind the dead body of a person from season one, when you lay on the ground, not that he would even recognize it, is a little thing. It's the little things that I expect them to inject heavily into two. But it is, again, I enjoyed it, but not because it carries us any further along. If anything, it adds more questions instead of giving any answers whatsoever. It's an interesting take on things. I think it leaves out some of the best parts of what they've done with the Walking Dead games. The characterizations are very solid. The voice acting is fantastic. But there is no hero. And there really isn't exactly a villain. It's just...
It's just people?
It's just Tales from the Walking Dead, you know? It's just a bunch of stuff that happened in a cornfield in Georgia.
Around the same time that what happened in season one. Which, of course, again, we were a little bit... We tried to go through... a bit of a timeline to see if it was 400 days worth in season one.
Right.
Best we can figure, it never got that far.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, best we can figure...
3-4 months?
The timeline that I found, it goes up to episode 3, and that was around the 101st day mark after the apocalypse.
Yeah, and I don't remember any long stretches of time with the first season.
Yeah, episodes 4 and 5, those would have been quickly upon each other, you know, because once you got to Savannah, so there wouldn't have been months stretch of that either.
No,
so
maybe a few weeks. We can give them that much. But in any case, those events are likely to be long over if 400 days is any indication of where we can expect to be in season two. I would imagine the events of season one are long over.
And I would say if you are playing and you get the 50% screen at the end of your playthrough where everybody is 50%.
It's a lie.
Yeah, that is not the case. I would say to back out to the dashboard, quit the game, whatever the case, open the game back up, go to that chapter and look at your stats, and they should have reset. They should have reset for you.
There's been some issues with this game. It's been
As there, Matt.
I am actually having some pretty bad issues with it myself, where it's not working at all.
What's your situation?
I go to, you know, I'm on Steam, and I go to run the game, and it just pops up with the little, you know, Steam is initiating this, you know, the little gray box, you know, saying it's starting, and then nothing. It doesn't start. And I don't get any other screen. It goes right back to my desktop. And so
what have you looked up that you say?
I've been looking in the forums, and
the forums?
Have, yeah, the Steam forums for the you know, for the game, and a lot of people are having the same issue. There's been some help, you know, some people saying try and put it in compatibility mode for Windows 98 and ME, and that worked for some people. Some people saying run it as an administrator, that worked for some people.
Right, yeah.
I found one guy that says, you know, download this DLL, and I'm going to try that.
Actually always turns out to be a great idea on the internet. Download DLLs that guys have, and they're like, this will fix all your problems.
I've tried everything else.
Hold off on that one.
Yeah.
I'm sure if they're complaining enough, I'm sure they'll get a patch out for it.
Well, I'm reading back on this. This happened back in episode 5 as well. So this whole, you know, running in compatibility mode has been an issue ever since episode 5. And, you know, people...
I also read other people run into where it can't detect, you know, it asks, hey, would you like us to generate choices for you from season one?
Yeah.
Because it's not finding people's saves either.
I guess the one thing I'm going to try when I go back and try it again tonight is some people saying disconnect your controller. And sometimes there's some conflicts with the controller.
Yeah. Whatever. Wesker sunglasses are in the other room, man.
That they are.
You just keep chasing those issues and those suggestions. I'm sure you'll find something.
Yeah. I have nothing else to do. I mean, I want to play the game, so it's either that or don't play it.
Well, that is going to do it. Thanks, everybody, for joining us in the chat room, as well as everyone listening on the stream and even on the radios as well. Thanks to everybody who grabs us every week from iTunes or however you get our show for later use. Really appreciate it. Don't forget to join us on Twitter, Facebook, our forums at ColonyOfGamers.com. And if you're on Steam, we've got a Steam group you can join up with over there. Play games with us, other listeners. We give away games, and we're trading cards. So get on that. Plus, check out our Minecraft server at play.ingamechat.net. Thanks, everybody. We're going to see you next Saturday. We leave you with music from, Seasons of War. That's what this is. See you next Saturday.